सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय Yes, please. We can read them. Hare Krishna.
I'm facing some issue with the laptop. Charchandra Prabhu, can you read? It's just taking time to.
Yeah, I left my light on today. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we ended in the middle of a paragraph. Shall I start at the beginning of said paragraph?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, probably better. Please. Thank you.
So this is the commentary of a verse. I'll actually read the verse as well. So the verse is, all works of sacrifice, penance, and charity, which are true to the absolute nature and are performed to please the Supreme Person, O Son of Pritha, are called sat. That is Bhagavad Gita 17:27. And the commentary, yajna.
Wow, such an important verse.
Yes, it's the
such an essential verse.
Yeah, it's at the end of the 17th chapter where it talks about Om Tat and Sat. So this is talking about Sat.
Is this the last verse, or it's just at the near the end?
I don't know if it's the last. It is very close to the end, though.
Okay, I know but it gives such a nice conclusion that all those things have to be connected to the Lord.
Yes. So then the commentary. Yajna refers to Sri Vishnu. Yajna, or all the devotional activities like Shravanam Kirtanam from early morning to the last offering of flowers when the Lord is put to rest at night. Tapa means having given up fruit of daily and periodic rituals and performing only actions devoted to the Lord. Dana means serving the great devotees of Lord Krishna by the body, mind, and speech with devotion and faith, and, as indicated by the word cha, service to satisfy brahmanas and all living entities by feeding them. Yajna can also mean Vishnu and service to him according to the scriptures. These things must be done and nothing else. The word sat is used always for these sacrifices and such situations, but other kinds of yajna and activities are described here as asat or illicit. Therefore, the word sat cannot be used there. Tad artiyam means bodily sufferings accepted to execute activities such as sacrifice, charity, and penance, collecting donations of money from businessmen, making flower gardens, sitting or resting places, and planting many kinds of plants for the Lord and his devotees. Learned scholars categorize these kinds of activities as sat. Therefore, the householder devotees of Krishna, being born in sadbhava or in pure goodness, through instructions on the name and mantra of the Lord, should worship only the Lord in all performances, not demigods and forefathers. Simply by worshiping Lord Krishna, Govinda, all the demigods and forefathers are worshipped. That's the end of that point.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so what we even see is here is just as in the principle that whenever there is some point where it's saying in the verse that, you know, by mental speculation or by renunciation, you know, and knowledge, then you cannot know the Supreme Lord. Then the Acharyas point out that means it also means karma won't work either. So in other words, if you reject the higher one, the lower one also won't work. So then when you're rejecting all these worship of the demigods, worship of the forefathers, and all that, that means then on also these lower levels on the mundane platform that are not necessarily connected with the scriptures. It's just, you know, appreciating great personalities or great ideologies or, you know, all these different things like that. Then these are also naturally rejected. So it's not just, oh yeah, the Vedics rejected, we keep the modern. No, it's anything from there on down. So if you're rejecting the activities in Manomoy, that means Pranamoy and Anamoy are automatically rejected. So one has to understand that these verses, they're not just regional, they're universal. They apply across the board to, you know, the full application. Yes? No?
Yes. So I just checked real quick. That's the second to the last verse in chapter 17.
Okay. Second to the last.
Yeah, the last one then would be, let's see, anything done as sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asat and is useless both in this life and the next. So it continues on that point, but then it just points out what asat is.
Yeah, so that means that 27, that's actually the central verse. And then that's showing the negative. It showed the positive first and the negative. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just thinking that the some of these, because there's these groups of verses, you know, verses like that give that essential point, how everything should be connected to Krishna, you know, through the Gita. There might be like, I'm not sure how many, but there's, you know, the ones that give like an essence like that. I'm just thinking, is that kind of thing might be an element to use as a structure, the introduction. Well, I guess in the introduction it comes out. And then those verses could be referred to when we study the introduction or something to the Gita. But something that you get the idea that everything's already included here. So then when you go through the Gita, one doesn't get distracted by any secondary things. And then you have to iron it out again.
Right.
It's already been mentioned in the beginning.
Yeah, and then just before that verse, it describes then what Om and Tat are. So all of those together are very essential, because it's talking about, I think that's the divisions of faith, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's talking about all of the different things that are done according to the different modes. And then the closer to goodness you are, the better. But even if you are in goodness, if it's not done for Krishna Om Tat Sat, then it's also causing further bondage. So that's the conclusion of that chapter, Om Tat Sat.
Yeah, no, because it's an essential thing. Prabhupada used to use that a lot, Om Tat Sat. Because that's like the essence in three syllables, then you get the full philosophy. Because Sat, as he mentions, is all the circumstances that you're in and all that. Then that knowledge and doing it, you know, in relationship to the Lord, then that's the Tat. And then Om is then appreciating the person that you're trying to please and his name, form, qualities, pastimes, associates, paraphernalia, everything. So that's all included altogether. So it itself as a phrase is the complete philosophy is there. Okay.
Okay. Anything so then else, this, sir?
Yes, please continue.
This next point, it's entitled Worship of Govinda is Worship of All. It is said in the Skanda Purana, upon worshiping Lord Hari, the God of Gods, who is holding a lotus, conch shell, and club in his hands, all the forefathers and demigods are worshipped because Lord Hari includes everything. Commentary. Indra, the King of Heaven, is the controller of all the 33 million demigods, and Brahma, the creator of the universe, is to be praised even by Indra. But Lord Sri Hari is the master of Brahma and all the ancestors. Therefore, when Vasudev, who holds a lotus, conch shell, disc, and club, is worshipped, all those demigods and forefathers who are supposed to be worshipped in all the activities of Nitya, Naimittika, etc., to remove obstacles, are automatically worshipped, as he is the cause of all the demigods and ancestors, and is the controller and master of all. Because the Lord removes the three kinds of miseries of his devotees who are engaged in his service constantly, he is called Hari. In the age of Kali, those who are situated in Varna and Ashram and are always engaged in worship of Lord Sri Hari and in the chanting of his names are considered to have already performed all Nitya and Naimittika actions. As is mentioned in the Brihan Naradiya Purana, those who engage in chanting the holy name of Lord Hari, Japa, are addicted to congregational chanting, Kirtana, and engage in the worship of Lord Hari, have accomplished their desires in the age of Kali. End quote. Commentary on that verse. Those who have accepted the name of the Lord from bona fide spiritual master, and by the association and teachings of Bhagavat Dharma, have purified their hearts by the chanting of Hari Nam, and with their body, mind, and speech are addicted to the Lord and his holy name, and thus freed from the activities which are the cause of material bondage and false doership. They follow activities such as remembering, pleasing, meditating, attending Sankirtan festivals, and hearing and discussing the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Upanishad, Narayan Upanishad, and other scriptures like Vedas, Puranas, Upapuranas, Agamas, Smritis, Mahabharata, and other Vaishnava Shastras. Hari Puja Para means those who engage only in devotional service to the Lord, avoiding the worship of demigods, forefathers, and other fruitive activities. By doing this, they satisfy all living entities. In the previous ages...
Because like you have in the general kind of Hindu populace, that you know, they're very much on the aspect of the worship of the demigods and the forefathers. That's what we can see is that that's what the scriptures is emphasizing. And so if those two are done, you know, all the different things are included within those. So then here you can see is that just by catching those two, and if you need to give details, then they get into the Panchopashana. But then by worshiping Krishna, then all that's accomplished. There is nothing left. So it's not like, you know, all these other things. Well, there's so many things. Which ones? No, once you mention those, that means everything. Yes, please.
In the previous ages of Satya, Treta, and Dvarapa, people attained their goals after a long time by the processes of austerity, sacrifice, charity, and worship. But in Kali Yuga, whatever is performed every day in the service of Lord Govinda is blissful, and that bliss is unattainable even by Brahma. Devotees perform service to Govinda, such as sacrifice, penance, charity, digging wells or lakes, making flower garlands, resting places, bridges, construction of the best temples, whole year traveling festivals, and offering juicy fruits, cakes, rice prepared with milk, many kinds of ornaments, fragrant flowers, chandan from Malaya, fragrant aguru, camphor, betel nut, incense, lamps, blowing a conch shell, ringing a bell, and chanting congregationally before the Lord every morning and evening. Those who are fixed in such devotional service, being surrendered to the Lord, accomplish their desires simply by worshiping and chanting the names of the Lord. In other words, they fulfill their ultimate desire by constantly remembering and worshiping Lord Hari with discrimination, without committing any nama or seva aparads. They will certainly be free from the fetters of worldly existence.
It explains everything that devotees do. Like even remember the last time when he gave a list, the previous, you know, point in the commentary. The evenings and even, you know, collecting money for rich people, you know, and all that. So if you took this whole list of everything that he includes, you would see that that would be, you know, all the activities of the devotees. Very nice. Yes, please continue.
In Padma Purana, Lord Shiva says to Durga, in the dangerous age of Kali, only those who have abandoned all kinds of religious activities and engage in the service of Lord Vasudev are really successful. Kritartha. Of this, there is no doubt. Commentary. The word ghore means very dangerous, subject to the unavoidable networks of dangers which bind one in worldly existence. This Kali Yuga arrives after the age of Dvarapa and has a duration of 432,000 years. Sarva Dharma Vivarjita means those who have avoided all kinds of religious activities of Varna and Ashrama and only engage in the service of Lord Vasudev, not even worshipping demigods and forefathers to achieve fruitive results. They are doubtlessly successful in their purpose. It has already been explained that both service to Vasudev and the fulfillment of one's desire is achieved by chanting the holy name of Lord Hari and other devotional activities. It is also stated in Skanda Purana, O Keshava, one who is your devotee has performed all auspicious activities, while one who is not your devotee is the committer of all sinful activities. Commentary. Lord Brahma himself says, quote, simply because he is your devotee, O Keshava, whoever adores only you is the performer of all religious activities. That means the pure and steady-minded devotee has certainly already performed all fruitive activities, which he is supposed to perform in his so-called religion according to Varna and Ashram, such as worshipping demigods and honoring forefathers, because he worships you, the infallible Godhead. But, O Achyuta, one who is not your devotee, or one who has not accepted your holy name from a bona fide guru, and has neglected to follow the regulative principles, being under the control of the external energy of the Lord, and desiring to get material results, is certainly a committer of sinful activities. End quote. How is this?
He's going to say, how is this? He's going to explain?
Yeah.
Okay, please, then continue.
Okay, sorry. How is this possible? Having avoided dedication to devotional service and rejecting the worship of the Lord, who is always in pure goodness, one who acts like a prostitute to follow activities prescribed in Shruti, Smriti, and Puranic texts that are in the modes of passion and ignorance, perform many kinds of yoga, sacrifice, oblations, charity, penance, and worship of demigods, according to the statement, Svakarma Palabhuk Pumam, one has to enjoy or suffer according to all of his deeds. One has to revolve in the cycle of birth and death through 8,400,000 species of life as an enjoyer of his own deeds after leaving his body. After wandering through all these species, when one finally gets a human life, that person again acts sinfully by the influence of his previous activities because of not having lived according to the principle of devotional life.
Well, that's also interesting here is that because lots of the time when we look at that kind of aspect of they perform all sinful acts and then we might complain, but no, there's plenty of people doing nice things and being good and all those kind of things. But here then the Acharya puts it into perspective that he's talking about, you know, the sojourn of the soul itself, the soul proper, not the particular situation he's in just right now only, that you have this whole, you've been going through this cycle, and wherever it is, it's always going. So even if you're going pious, why is it that if at some point when you get to the top of the circle, then, you know, the impiety starts to increase and it goes down? In other words, the impiety is being checked on the way up by that determination for piety, but it's still there, but it's being checked. But once you get to the top, then that checking in place, one becomes more relaxed and more kind of comfortable in that pious situation. So now the sinful desires start to manifest, and then, and that takes one down. So even if it's not there, the sinful desires are there in the mind and all that, because the soul is meant to serve Krishna. And so just on that cycle of karma, that sinful, all will be doing is sin, because even if it's not in this life, you know, very soon lifetimes, he'll be again going down into the, you know, sinful situations and regions and species. So it's just time. And so since you're looking at eternal, what benefit is the soul getting by being a nice guy today, when, you know, in a short time in the future, then he'll, you know, be in an unfortunate situation. And then you have, of course, the aspect from 11th canto, where then Krishna is explaining that anything done in connection to Krishna, that's actually called pious. Anything not done in connection with Krishna, even if it's following the Veda and doing all these things, worshiping demigods and worshiping the forefathers and all this, doing one's duties, then it's still considered sinful, because he's not actually doing what you're supposed to do. Because piety means performing the duties that you're supposed to do. Impiety means in neglecting those duties or going against those duties. So if you're not worshiping Krishna, which is the nature of the soul, you are sinful. It's just a matter, you might be nice sinful, just like there's nice animals and then there's, you know, very nasty animals. Just because they're nice doesn't mean that they're not animals in the mode of ignorance. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so please continue.
Okay. Again, in the same scripture, Skanda Purana, it is said, O Lord Hari, even the sinful actions committed by your devotees are considered a religious action, but a non-devotee who performs all kinds of religious activities is still thrown into hell. End quote. Commentary. The meaning of bhakta and abhakta have been explained already. O Lord, the apparent sin of not performing demigod and ancestor worship by your devotees is certainly considered correct according to the principles of Bhagavad Dharma, because they have undeviated devotion to the Lord. On the other hand, a non-devotee may perform all kinds of religious actions, but as a result, he has to fall down to hell. This refers to all the actions mentioned in the Vedas and Puranas, which are in the modes of passion and ignorance, such as Soma Yaga, Yajapeya Yaga, Sadanga Yaga, Atonement, Panchagni Sadhana, the process in which one has to sit down lighting five fires around himself, Vayu Bhojana, or eating only air, Ashvamedha Yajna, penance and sacrifice, which involves killing animals and worshipping demigods. After quitting his body, such a person sometimes goes to the heavenly planets and enjoys the results of his actions. Sometimes he stays on this planet, and sometimes he falls down to hell. I, Lord Brahma, servant of your servants, being afraid of Kali, pray to you, O Lord Hari, by the two vocative words, Hare, end quote. This section proves that in any Varna, the Vaishnava who exclusively worships Vishnu is the best, and among all the Vaishnavas, the Brahmana Sannyasi is the best. In the same text, it is mentioned, quote, a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or whatever one may be, if he is dedicated to Vishnu, he is considered the best of people, end quote. Commentary. It was mentioned earlier that a person who has taken up the devotional service of Lord Vishnu is superior to all others inside or outside the Varnashram system. He has completely rejected fruitive activities like worship of demigods and forefathers and Nitya, Naimittika, and Kamya rites mentioned in the Vedas and Puranas, which are in the modes of passion and ignorance. Va means applicable to any of the Varnas, and Yadi means if. Even if born in low families, if one gives up all kinds of activities that cause further entanglement in material existence and takes up serving the devotees, he is considered the best. The Shudra, who is a servant of a devotee, is superior to the Shudra serving a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. There are 11 kinds of Shudras according to Harita Sanghita. The Palaganda, who's a stone worker or clay pot maker. Tantravaya, a weaver. Malakara, a gardener. Tailika, an oil man. Karmakara, a blacksmith. Tambulika, seller of betel nuts. Modaka, a confectioner. Talika, plate maker. Tambulikrit, a preparer of betel leaves. And Gopa, a milker of cows, which is distinct from the Vaishya, who owns the cows. And last, Napita, a barber. All are counted in the Shudra category, but the Gopas and the Napitas are the true Shudras. So the cow milkers and the barbers.
Yeah, it's even said that the barbers, they're the one, I think, I'm not sure if there's another one. It could be the who takes care of the cows. It could be those two are the only two that, let's say, you know, whoever they're working for, they could, accept food from them. But all the others one would avoid, you know, for a Brahmin, because they're in a, you know, a different kind of category. So then here it's there. Yeah. Because the other ones, they're just connected with those things and doing those things to make the money. But here you're dealing with cows, you're dealing with people. And because of that, you have to be very, you know, considerate of the cows, considerate of the people, you know, that you're shaving and all that. And so their mood is quite different than, you'll see their mood is very different and much more kind of interactive and personal than all the other ones. Because the other ones is they have to very... They have to, focus on what they're doing to create those environments. I mean, those things that they're working with. And only after having done that, then they can interact with you. But here it's that their barbers are directly interacting with you. And the cowherds, you know, the assistants there, they're directly interacting with the cows. And in this way, then interacting with the Vaishya who owns the cows. So their mood is quite different. So I think that's why they're singled out amongst all the different kinds.
Yeah, makes sense. The rest are sort of indirect. They're not really directly dealing with.
Yeah. It's more about their skill. Of course the others have skill, but it's skill with inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. While we see with those two, the what they call them, gopas, or what did they call that group of sudra?
Gopa is the milker of the cows, and then the napita is a barber.
Yeah, so those two, then they work directly with people. With living entities. You know, their skill is in context of how much they are considered of and working, you know, according to the nature of who they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know, while the others, yes, they have to work according to the nature of stone or of clay or betel nut or, you know, the gardens like that. But still, it's not about, you don't have the element of seeing the consciousness and those things. So it's interesting how, because of that personal interaction and the level of consciousness that you must have, then it's much greater. Plus, also, if they do something wrong, the reaction is much greater. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, please.
Okay, then the Vaishya, performing duties such as farming, commerce, and cow protection, avoiding fruitive actions which cause one to enjoy or suffer in heaven or hell, and serving only the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, is superior to a Shudra serving the higher classes. Superior to such a Vaishya is a Kshatriya who in his occupation serves the Brahmanas of great devotion and faith, and with determination protects all living entities by his heroic qualities. Superior to such a Kshatriya is a Brahmana who has destroyed the karma causing material bondage and in hellish sufferings, who has the 8 or 12 qualities described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and who chants only the Brahma Gayatri and avoids all rituals aiming at material enjoyment. The 12 qualities are stated in Mahabharata by Sanat Sujata. They are religiosity, truthfulness, sense control, austerity, non-envy, modesty, tolerance, freedom from fault-finding, sacrifice, charity, steadiness, and knowledge. These are the 12 qualities of a Brahmana.
Wow. Interesting how he's going through and describing, because he's getting up and then, because once he's removed the idea of worshiping the demigods and the forefathers and established simply worship of Govinda, now he's showing also that within the Varnashram, because these worship of the demigods and worship of the forefathers is part of Varnashram. Now he's showing within Varnashram, what are the actual positions, and then who, you know, what is the actual standard? You know, it means, in other words, the gold standard of Shudras is this, the gold standard of this is that. So, you know, it moves up, you know. And so now he's bringing it up through and those who have those qualities. So it's not just so generic. It means this is the standard by which you judge how good one is at being a Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahman. Not this is so generic that anything within the category is good enough. It means it may be within the category, but the standard, how you measure it, is this, because otherwise then people tend to use their own standards. So it's very interesting that even now Varnashram is being defined so that you can understand then how the Vaishnav, who therefore then worships only Govinda, that he's superior within the system. Otherwise you could say, okay, well, the Vaishnavs, what they're doing is maybe superior, but they themselves are not, because we're a Brahmin or we're a Kshatriya or this or that. But here then you'll see is that no, the Vaishnav is going to be superior to all these. So the mode of worship is superior, the position is superior. Please.
Okay, commentary. Vai means certainly. These are the 12 qualities of Brahmanas who are purified by chanting Gayatri mantra. Dharma means to be steady in proper behavior, avoiding non-religious action. Satyam means always being truthful, even till the end of life. Dhamma means sense control. Tapa means to be steady in daily austerity, not giving trouble to the body for fruitive results. Hri means always being modest because of great civility and out of fear of social dishonor and falling to a lower position. Amatsarya means free from jealousy, free from showing one's household opulence to put down others. A person should be enthusiastic to see others' advancement. Titiksha means to be tolerant of abusive speech, insult, defeat, disregard, disrespect, and other bodily troubles. Anasuya means not finding any fault in others. Yajna means non-fruitive sacrifices or the yajna of chanting Gayatri mantra hundreds and thousands of times. Daanang refers to those charitable activities like distributing water, food, clothes to all, whether invited or uninvited guests, relatives, and others who are within or outside of the Varnashram system, with devotion and according to one's ability. There is no sankalpa, vow, or desire to enjoy the fruit of such distribution. Dhriti means firmness and satisfaction of the mind without disturbance from the turbulence of the material world. Shruta means having natural attraction for studying, teaching, and hearing the Vedas in the mode of goodness. The qualities of brahmanas, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, it's such a great elaboration of that list.
Yeah, no, it's just, I'm just thinking is that you could use this end part like this as kind of like the opening for the Chaitanopanayanam course on Varnashram, on Manu, because here you're giving all the essence, and then after that, then you can just pick those kind of details, and then from Manu, those particular verses and purports from Prabhupada and the Acharyas that explain it in the context of Daiva Varnashram. So don't even bother looking at Manu from just the Varnashram aspect, but only those things that Vaishnavas themselves would use. Right. Make it very, very, easy actually to approach it. Otherwise, there's always, well, how much do you put and this and that?
Mm. The qualities of brahmanas are also described in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.28, 7.7.9, and 7.11.21. In Narada Pancharatra 1.2.42, it says that the Svadharma of the Brahmanas is to serve Krishna and to eat his Naivedya, an offering of bhoga to the deity, and to drink his padaka, water, daily. Superior to such a Brahmana is a Brahmachari who practices all the Brahminical qualities faithfully throughout his life and practices all the rules of Brahmacharya or penance as mentioned in the Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas. Superior to such a brahmachari is a grihastha, a householder, who has the same brahminical qualities and offers service to guests who come by their own will without any invitation with food and water and satisfies them according to his ability. The vanaprast, who has renounced his grihastha ashrama and stays in the forest with his wife, following strictly all the rules of brahminical qualities, is superior to such a householder. And the sannyasi, or an ascetic, who practices all the rules and regulations as prescribed in the Vedas, Puranas, Upapuranas, and Mahabharata, is superior to such a vanaprastha. This last section shows that the sannyasi, the topmost person in the Varnashram system, gives up all fruitive actions, worship of the devatas and pitris completely. He is a model for all others to follow. In Bhagavad Gita 18.2, Lord Krishna speaks about sannyas to Arjuna. Giving up all activities that are based on material desire is what great learned men call the renounced order of life, sannyas. And giving up the result of actions is what the wise call renunciation, tyaga, end quote. Commentary. Giving up of kamya karmas is known by the learned men as sannyas. And giving up the result of activity is called tyag, or renunciation, by the wise men. There is a deep import in the words of the Lord. One may ask whether one may perform all the nitya and naimittika activities if only kamya karmas are rejected. If that were so, then what is the question of sannyas? The Shruti says, Om tad van vai karma krit sannyaso naigamam karma cha anyasat karmi nyasat sannyasa hehiti. One who does not give up Vedic performance is a karmi, and one who gives it up is a sannyasi. The word he means certainly. Nigama means activities prescribed in the Vedas. In this world, the performer of such activities is certainly called a karmi. Being talented in all such activities, he is called karmata, active. Therefore, not performing such activities gives rise to sannyas, and one who performs the duty of a sannyas is called sannyasi. The mentioning of sannyas, the meaning of sannyas is mentioned in Uttara Gita. Quote, there are three kinds of activities, namely nitya, naimittika, and kamya. Giving up all such activities is called nyasa, renunciation. And one who practices renunciation is called sannyasa, or sannyasi, end quote. Commentary. Experts in karma understand that there are three kinds of activities. Not performing them is sannyas. One who does so is called sannyasi. What then is the difference from tyag, giving up the results of such activities? One should understand that simply by performing the nitya karma, even without desire to get the result, one certainly gets a result. According to the statement of Shruti, atahara sandhyam upasita, one should perform sandhya rites every day. That activity is done with the aim to remove accidental sins. Though one may not desire those results, the result will still come. As stated in Harita Sanghita, the twice-born Dvija, who engages in japa, or chanting the Gayatri mantra daily, at the three sandhyas, attains the planet of Brahma. Commentary. Dvija means Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya. Trikala Gnya means the knower of the three junctures of the day, morning, noon, and evening. Gayatri Japa Tatparaha means he is seriously engaged in Gayatri Japa at the time of Sandhya. He naturally attains Brahmaloka after he quits his body, even though he has no desire to enjoy the result of his work. Also, in the Naimittika karmas, such as offering pindas to the ancestors, one gets the result of his work even without having any desire for the results, as stated in Skanda Purana. Quote, one who offers pinda or food to his forefathers in Gaya, in the region of Viraja, on the hill called Mahendra, on the bank of Jahnavi, Ganga, attains the planet of Brahma, which is free from diseases. Commentary. Gaya refers to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, and for an area of 2 miles, kosha, around, or according to the Puranas, 4, 8, and 16 miles around. Cha means Kurukshetra, Badrinath, Kedarnath, Venkatachala, Sri Ranganath Kshetra, Sri Purushottama Kshetra, and other pilgrimage places. In the same way, the word Jahnavi Tate refers to any place within a distance of 2 miles from the Ganga. In these places, one who offers pinda, performing shraddha to his forefathers, certainly accomplishes his desires and attains Brahmaloka. Similarly, his sons and grandsons who offer pindars also attain anamai, or the place which is free from all kinds of disturbances. The three kinds of miseries, disease, and lamentation for half the lifetime of Lord Brahma, Dviparadha.
This may also then explain the aspect of, because he said that was anamaya, that you're free from all these things that come with the, you know, the bodily condition and all that. So that may be what in the Bhrigu-vali and Taittiriya Upanishad then it's talking about when then Bhrigu has that realization, you know, that aham annam, aham annam, aham annam. That is, you know, that you come to the... Sorry?
This is anamaya. That is
anamaya. Okay. Okay. Yes, so please continue.
Okay. Kamya karmas are specifically performed to fulfill some desire, but result is there even if one performs them without any desire. As stated in Brihad Vishnu Purana, any one in this world can be free from all kinds of sinful reactions by performing atonement and the 12-year penance. End quote. Commentary. In this world, any person, even outside the Varnashrama system, who performs Chandrayana, or atonement, and the 12 years austerity according to his wealth, without desiring the result, becomes free from all kinds of sinful reactions, namely Pataka, Maha Pataka, Atipataka, and Anupataka. One becomes free not only from suffering in the hellish planets as a result of sinful reaction, but becomes free from material bondage. Therefore, it is said that sannyas is to give up completely nitya, naimittika, and kamya activities, whereas tyag is to perform all those activities, giving up the fruits. There should be no confusion about this.
Yeah, very clear. Very clear.
And that ends the introduction.
Okay. It's also interesting here is that how he takes it through and then he ends with that aspect of the sannyasa and all that, because then, you know, in connection with the Satkriyasar, which are the, you know, the 10 samskars that one will perform, whether the households will perform, then you also have the samskar deepika, which is then the sannyas ceremony, which then can be coupled in the same work, you know, because, yeah. And so then, so from, you know, that marriage and then the birth and everything up to like that, and then onto the sannyas, then it can all be put together. So you've shown that full development. Okay, how are we doing on time?
We still have 9 minutes.
Okay.
It's interesting how, because we just talked about the Om Tat Sat, which is the end of the 17th chapter. And then Arjuna's question immediately after that, of course, because, you know, means we have to do it for Vishnu. But then there's a difference between, you know, not doing it for ourselves and then actually doing it for Vishnu. So that's the difference between sannyas and what is it, tyag?
Tyag, yeah. Renunciation. Yeah, because that's the next, that's 18.1. So
Well, that was 18.2, I think.
Yeah, 18.2.
Yeah, so it's basically, right after. So then that's how the introduction then ends, to make sure that that's actually, you know, pointed out.
Yeah, that's also, it's just very clear, is that you're doing the activity without desire for the result. And the other is you give up those activities because it's not there. So therefore, if it's something within the So you have the aspect of nitya, naimittic, and kamya, that they're going to be, you know, for the fruit of benefit. Well, then devotional service, you're completely giving that up. So you're only doing things that will please the Lord. So there's no other interest than pleasing the Lord. So those activities within the, you know, religious principles given in the Vedas that are supportive of, you know, like that as directly as possible, supportive of the devotional activities, then that's what's left. So that will be your Daivavarnashram. So then that will be, you're doing that without desire for the results. So that would be tyag. You know, so then like that. But then if you're doing everything simply just to please Krishna, so then even the householder is sannyasi, you know, from the mentality, maybe not by the occupational duties performed, but by mentality. So it's a matter of because he says the results will come. And so then now you have to then give them, while the other is that you don't perform those things to produce those kind of results. Yes, no.
Yeah. Okay, so then preliminary procedures, Mangalacharna, invocation. At the beginning of the vivaha, wedding ceremony, or any other samskara, one should recite Mangalacharna, then make a platform, Vedi, which should be 4 hasta long, approximately 6 feet, on both sides, and 4 mushti high, approximately 1 foot, with a canopy over it.
Yeah, a mushti will be a fist.
Okay, so,
you know, so you put 1, 2, 3, 4 like that, because that means it's 16 fingers, you know, 16 angulas. So 24 angulas is 1.5 feet. So 16 will be 2/3 of that. So it would be 1 foot. And because 24 angulas will be 1.5 feet, and 16 will be 1 foot. But it's according to who's building. You know, it's either according to the person, the priest who's, you know, the head priest, or according to the yajaman, you know, or you know, just the person who's putting it together. He's building it, so therefore he measures it himself. Or it, you make a measurement off of one of those. But, you know, in any case, it works. So then, you know, 4 fists high, that's the height that you want to go, you know.
And hasta is elbow to fingertip?
Generally, yeah, end of the elbow, generally to the little finger.
Oh, the little finger.
Excuse me, to the middle finger.
Or the middle finger.
The little finger is another one, the middle finger. And okay, the little finger, then, I think, is a different one. Even these have, you know, measurements and stuff, different names. They're basically the same, but, you know, as you can see, it's 2 fingers less. Or if you've got a shorter finger, it might even be 3 fingers. But when you're measuring this way, half a hand will be from the tip of your little finger to the tip of the thumb. Because you'll see, as if you put that there, then that will end up, you know, basically like that. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then that's 1/4, you know, so it's 6. You know, because you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and that'll be 2. You know, like that. So then, you know, 4 of those, 1, 2. So you want to get just 1 like that, or then the mushti is 4, which you just would measure like that. But like that, you can measure everything. Like the Gurukul, all that brickwork is all done by hands. It's all done by that. Like those bricks, the rises on the brick are 5 fingers. You know, like that. You know, and then they're 4 fingers wide, because that's about 3 inches. You know? So so 3 times 4 is 12. So then like that, and then you have the brickwork is done by the fingers, the angula. Like that.
So that's the original.
Then are done. Yeah, that's the original. You know, like
the original rule of thumb.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, now modern, they attribute it to, they only know about it from the Egyptians. They talk about the cubit, but the cubit is just, you know, that's the Vedic measurement.
Oh, that's the, so hast is the same as a cubit?
Yeah, hast and the cubit are the same.
Oh.
Maybe they use a different finger or something, what they go, but it's the same thing. Also, your body is generally, you know, it's like your arms, you know, if you do like this, you would go in, they'll be here. So it's like that. And your height will be the same, you know, so according to you, that's how it works. You know, so you just have that average that it's going to be that, but it actually, when you're doing the sacrifice, you build it accordingly. But if you want to get the thing and match it with the feet and all that, then you can do it, you know, that way. You know, that one hand is 18 inches, you know, so then four mushtis will be a foot, you know, mm-hmm. and then that'll be then 16 fingers, you know, which four fingers is 3 inches, you know, so two fingers will be 1.5, like that. So as long as you're using those two, it kind of matches. Problem is when you get into these, into the meters, that's where it then gets thrown off. Because they only match up like at 5 feet, you know.
Right.
I think, you know, that then there's some matching there and stuff. And yeah.
Is there a certain height the canopy is meant to be over it? Or just...
It might mention there, but he may be just giving general here. He might later give more details. But Hari Bhakti Vilas will give also quite details. The canopy. It should be high enough that no one's going to bump into it, you know, but not too high that it's not going to match and look like one unit.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would expect it would be at least, 6 feet, you know, 4 hands high, you know, or 4 and a bit, you know, so that people don't, because generally when you worship, you're going to sit down, or if you're going to go in, you're going to bend over. So no one's going to be walking on top of it, but, you know, but that would be, yeah, so it should work. Mm. But when you're doing the fire, I would do it, you know, then you use a much higher canopy.
Okay.
Oh, we're already at the time. Okay, so we'll end here for today. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.